Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, discussion of possible sanctions against those who benefit from cyber theft. A new NASA program to help with climate change in parts of Asia. A warning following the hacking of Ashley Madison.
If at the moment the hackers are winning, we all really need to think about what we're voluntarily doing and adding on the internet.
And we found out a couple of stars that will be dancing this season. It's coming up here on The Voice of America. The Washington Post newspaper says the Obama administration is preparing unprecedented economic sanctions against Chinese companies and individuals who benefit from the cyber theft of valuable U.S. trade secrets. My colleague Victor Beatty is following this story and joins me here in the studio. Welcome, Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, the paper, quoting several administration officials, says the U.S. has not yet decided to issue the sanctions, which could involve asset freezes and blocking the financial transactions of those engaged in cyber attacks. The officials say a final call is expected perhaps in the next couple of weeks, about the time President Xi Jinping is to arrive on his first state visit to Washington. It says the timing of the sanctions to the visit indicates how frustrated U.S. officials have become over persistent cyber plundering. The Post says it's unclear how many firms or individuals will be targeted, although it cites one official who said the Chinese firms would be large and multinational. It says the hacking last year into the U.S. government's Office of Personnel Management databases did not directly benefit Chinese industry, but its severity convinced officials firm action was warranted. Ankit Panda, editor of the Asia-Pacific Current Events publication, The Diplomat, spoke with me earlier about the pending decision.
If the administration goes ahead and implements these sanctions before Xi's visit, I think that'll send a pretty stark image. Relations between the United States and China have gotten quite strained over the summer. Obviously, the recent hack against the Office of Personnel Management, which has been heavily implied to have been carried out by Chinese operatives, led many in the United States to call for the administration to impose concrete costs against China. So what we're seeing here is an attempt to do exactly that. And this actually dovetails with the executive order that was signed in early April by the Obama administration that set out the terms for how the administration would deal with hackers from abroad, namely economic sanctions.
I guess this recent cyber attack on the Office of Personnel Management was the last straw.
It was an unprecedented attack. Look, I've also seen a lot of commentators in the United States make the argument that if the United States were in China's shoes and there was this largely unprotected, unencrypted database of highly sensitive government information, that the United States would have availed itself the opportunity to go in there and make the most of that. I think what's also interesting is, you know, you have the other issue that has grown to be a major thorn between the United States and China this year, which is the South China Sea. And many at the Pentagon have been calling for the United States to sail its military assets within 12 nautical miles of certain features in the South China Sea, where China has essentially converted reefs into artificial islands. By sailing within 12 nautical miles, the United States would be able to impose costs on China for its behavior, showing it that it does not recognize the legitimacy of its claims under international law. I think it's worth noting that the administration so far has been hesitant to do that because the risk of miscalculation, escalation, possible military conflict is much higher there. But with the cyber issue, I think it's more interesting because Chinese cyber espionage has a much more direct effect on U.S. national security and on the U.S. bottom line for a lot of U.S. firms. So I think the United States, with this move, is also going to signal to firms here at home that it is taking cybersecurity seriously and it will impose costs on China. So yes, this is a major move.
Meanwhile, Greg Austin, a China specialist at the Australian Center for Cybersecurity, says such sanctions are warranted if Washington can prove Chinese individuals or entities gained a clear competitive advantage from the theft of U.S. trade secrets. But
there will be very few cases where this can be actually proven in the public domain. It's quite one thing to be able to prove where a company has clearly copied or stolen a design of a Gucci handbag, but it's quite a different thing to prove conclusively that a company has stolen trade secrets simply by cyber espionage, when in fact there is a whole range of public domain information about patents and the detail of, you know, commercial activity and business designs already, you know, in the public domain. And this is why companies like Cisco have copyright battles with other American companies in United States courts. So it's a very complex field.
Here's two sentences in this Washington Post article. Quote, China is not the only country that hacks computer networks for trade secrets to aid the economy, but is by far the most active, according to officials. Just last month, the Federal Bureau of Investigation said economic espionage cases surged more than 50% in the past year and that China accounted for most of that.
Well, I certainly have no difficulty with the proposition that Chinese intelligence agencies, like many of their foreign counterparts, are scooping up commercial information by the terabyte. But there are a number of serious scholars in the United States and elsewhere, me included, who question the rate at which that theft of data can be converted to competitive advantage by Chinese commercial firms. There's no doubt that the espionage is happening. There's a lot of room for reflection on how much competitive advantage Chinese firms are getting from that espionage.
And Austin says the Obama administration will need to find the right balance between targeting specific Chinese corporations and more inflammatory rhetoric about Chinese government complicity in commercial espionage. China has denied such allegations and insists it is the victim of cyber attacks.
Thank you, Victor, for that report.
All right, Susan.
Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said on social media. Andrew, what do you got today?
Well, we have two trending topics of people who passed away. One, 18 years ago today, is Princess Diana died in that tragic car accident
yes,
in Paris.
It's so terrible.
A lot of tributes for her, a lot of look at the good work she did during her lifetime and the good work that's continued on after the fact with a lot of her foundations and things. People also pointing out, wondering what would she say today with Prince William being married, having two grandchildren, how would she react to that? So a lot of people remembering her today, a sad anniversary
for
sure.
Yeah, she was a real kid person. She loved kids. I'm sure she'd be just thrilled.
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of people be pointing that out, saying that she would have been a great grandmother. And so a lot of sadness, but a lot of hope, again, that, you know, her, she's done a lot of good work and that's continued even after she's gone. Another sad trending topic this morning is Wes Craven, the famous horror director.
He was a scary guy.
Oh, yeah, he was,
Freddy Krueger. I went to see all the Freddy
Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, all of these great classic horror films. He unfortunately passed away of brain cancer, 76 years old. But a lot of people remembering his movies saying, oh, this is the first horror movie I went to see. I had nightmares for weeks, and a lot of great memories about that as well. Even though they're scary movies, they instill a lot of great memories in people. And there's some great little cartoons of Freddy Krueger and the character from Scream kind of arm in arm mourning him. So some nice tributes for him. And then, of course, trending from last night into today is hashtag VMAs, the MTV Video Music Awards.
Right.
Lots of spectacle, to say the least.
I was going to say
bare skin and spectacle. Miley Cyrus hosting, and she's certainly one who likes to put on a show.
Or take off.
Something. Or yes, exactly. Which a lot of people are talking about. Kanye West also receiving a Vanguard Award. Had kind of a rambling speech. At the end of which he said, I'm running for president in 2020. So a lot of people on social media saying it's going to be Trump versus Kanye. They're looking forward to that. And then, of course, Taylor Swift, the big winner, video of the year for Bad Blood, where she had all her friends come in the music video. So they joined her on stage, some of those friends. And she said she had a nice sentiment. She said, it's great to make a video in a day and age where boys can be princesses and girls can be soldiers. So it was a nice little tribute from her.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. I appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A team of volunteers sailing in a flotilla of some 30 vessels recently completed its month-long research expedition through the western portion of the infamous Great Pacific Ocean garbage patch. The expedition sailed between Hawaii and San Francisco through the massive collection of marine debris so that it could gather data to find out how much plastic is actually floating in the Pacific Ocean. The Ocean Cleanup Group plans to use the gathered data to create the first high-resolution map of plastic in the Pacific, as well as to help in the preparation for the organization's large-scale ocean cleanup project planned for 2020. A 2014 study found that currently there are at least 5.25 trillion pieces of plastic floating in the oceans, with about one-third of it concentrated in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Science Scientists with the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration say warming waters and melting ice mean it is fairly certain that the planet is locked into about a 1 meter rise in sea levels by the year 2100. VOA correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok spoke with NASA Administrator Charles Bolden about a new program in the lower Mekong region to help cope with climate change. Mr. Bolden was asked how the project will benefit the people of Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, Thailand, and Vietnam.
One of the greatest benefits to people in the lower Mekong region, you know, coming all the way from Vietnam down through Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, even Myanmar, is the fact that it makes available to them 30 years worth of archived earth science data plus daily real-time data coming from Earth observing satellites that look at things that can help policymakers and farmers with crop planning, water resources management, disaster relief, disaster management, and also in things like drought and flood planning. So we think it will be of great benefit to people here in the entire Mekong region.
Now, how is this going to work operationally? Will there be Thais and Vietnamese and Cambodians, Laotians that are involved in this?
Operationally, it's a program that is focused within the or under the auspices of the U.S. Agency for International Development. And they actually have a center that's located here in Bangkok, which is the home for the Mekong Hub. They will work across the region with government representatives, with hopefully people who represent the farming community or policymakers in that nature to coordinate how the data is utilized and how the various nations collaborate with each other such that the actions taken by one nation are beneficial to others in the region. So I relate it sometimes to the way we do things on the International Space Station, where we have almost 20 different nations collaborating every single day in trying to help us understand better how we live and work in space. SERVIR serves in a similar way that helps us bring nations together who might not otherwise want to work with each other, but it works on a common focus of making life better for people here in the Mekong region.
NASA Administrator Charles Bolden. Coming up on International Edition, what we can learn from a big sex scandal, and two stars come out in Dancing with the Stars. It's fair to say that since hackers published the private details of over 37 million registered users of the adult infidelity website Ashley Madison, journalists have been having a field day sorting through the data, much to the entertainment of some. But the leak of private information detailing millions of people's intimate behaviors and desires is causing a great deal of distress as well, and has renewed questions about the ability to protect anyone's privacy online. International Edition's Doug Bernard covers the cyber world for us and joins me now. Welcome. You're always welcome, Doug.
It's always great to be here.
Thank you, Doug. So what is your take on all this?
So first off, Ashley Madison is an international website, and it offers its clients a chance to – it's sort of like a dating site for married adults. It's actually there to offer people who are married or in long-term relationships the chance to, as they say, have a little fling, have an affair.
Cheat on their spouses.
Cheat on their spouses. And by all measures, it's, you know, fairly popular. They claim over 39 million clients. A lot of records put it more close to like 37 or so because some of those are duplications. Still, that's millions and millions of people, and many of them from the United States. So what happened recently is a hacking team broke into the Ashley Madison databanks, and they threatened that unless you close your site down, we're going to release all of this personal, private, very intimate information on the web. Ashley Madison didn't respond, and so last week they did exactly that.
And it can destroy lives.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for the millions of people who were actually using this site, and again, have very private, personal details, you know, in their profiles, well now that's all public. So your spouse knows it, your potentially your family and friends know it, the circles grow out larger. potentially your employer knows it as well, or your professional contacts. And here's another concern, quickly, is that for those who are actually using the site, you can argue or not whether this is just desserts. But there is a certain proportion, and we don't know how many, of people whose identities or emails were stolen to create phony and fake accounts, but the database doesn't reflect that. So somebody could go and say, well, I see Doug Bernard at gmail.com, registered at Ashley Madison. Aren't you a terrible person? Whether or not I actually ever went to the site or not.
Right. And this really shows something about putting your information out there online. You're going to give me a little lecture here, aren't you?
Well, I think perhaps this is less a lecture and more a question that we all need to be asking ourselves. Think about how much of our personal private information is online. Some of it, such as our medical records and insurance records, that's involuntary. The companies do that, and they say they safeguard it. And we've seen in the last year they can't adequately safeguard it. There was the one leak of 74 million insurance records not quite even a year ago. And then there is that information that we're voluntarily sharing online, thinking, well, this is a site that encourages infidelity. I'm sure they'll safeguard my privacy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it turns out whether or not Ashley Madison actually took really robust security steps, it looks like they did. But this really is, I think, should put the question foremost in people's mind. Currently, can the internet really guarantee or maintain our privacy online? And if at the moment it can't, if at the moment the hackers are winning, we all really need to think about what we're voluntarily doing and adding on the internet.
Well, thank you very much, Doug, for stopping by. It's always nice to have you.
Always great to be here.
This is VOA.
I'm Neil Arcega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Television show Dancing with the Stars has announced part of its lineup for its 21st season. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA's Ray McDonald about the cast, which includes R&B veterans Chaka Khan and Hall of Fame jockey Victor Espinoza.
Dancing with the Stars has named part of its cast, and one of the members is Chaka Khan of Rufus fame, a soul singer extraordinaire. Ray, Chaka is going to be doing the foxtrot and the paso doble and all this other stuff?
On Dancing with the Stars, of all things. Dave, I just got back from vacation, and this was the first thing that hit me this morning when I opened up my computer and looked at the news. Chaka will be among the cast on the 21st season of Dancing with the Stars, and they've also named a few other stars who will be in the lineup.
And they are?
Yeah, former Backstreet Boy Nick Carter. Apparently, they've been after Nick for several years, and he finally said yes. Andy Grammer, who sings the current hit "Honey, I'm Good,"
he's
going to be on there.
No, no, honey, I'm good. I could have another, but I probably should not. I got somebody at home. It's been a long night here and a long night there, and these long, long legs are damn near everywhere. Hold up, now.
Bindi Irwin, the daughter of the late Australian crocodile hunter star Steve Irwin, is going to be there. Triple Crown winning jockey Victor Espinoza will be there. Hayes Greer, a teenager who became a star on YouTube and Vine, will be dancing. And At this point, she's probably the biggest newsmaker of the group. Disgraced chef Paula Deen.
Wow.
Will be on the cast of Dancing
Paula
with the Stars.
Paula Deen and Chaka Khan on the same program. Are we going to have a little trouble?
Maybe so. Maybe it could be, you know, Mariah Carey and Nicki Minaj. It could be one of those oil and water things.
I don't know about that. That's going to be a very interesting show to watch. Now,
yes.
For our audience members who don't know, these are celebrities. They are not professional dancers, but they are teamed with professional ballroom dancers. And they have to do a series of steps.
Yes.
The foxtrot, the tango, the paso doble, all these different ballroom steps. And they are judged by a panel of judges on how they performed.
Exactly right.
And then I believe America votes whether they should stay or not. Very similar to X Factor or American Idol or The Voice. It's right. Basically dancing version of that.
And, you know, David, makes for pretty compelling viewing. My wife and I used to be fans of the show. We drifted away. But by and large, the stars take it very seriously. They work hard. I mean, these are some pretty strenuous dance routines. And they're into it.
If you want to send Ray a tweet directly about this or anything else you hear on our show, you can do it at Ray on the Hits. That's his Twitter handle. You can also send one to @VOA_music. That will go to everybody here at VOA who works in the music department. And if you want to send one to us, you can send it to @VOA_IE. You can listen for Ray to count down the top 20 and the top 5 hits of the week every week on www.voanews.com.
Thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On August 25th, a Russian military court found Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov and Ukrainian activist Oleksandr Kolchenko guilty of politically motivated fabricated charges and sentenced Mr. Sentsov to 20 years and Kolchenko to 10 years in prison. The charges against Mr. Sentsov and Mr. Kolchenko are baseless and violate their human rights. The case against them rested on testimony obtained through torture, which in at least one case was retracted because it had been coerced. Indeed, Russia singled out Sentsov and Kolchenko for exercising their freedom of speech within a sovereign Ukraine, where they expressed their vocal opposition to Russia's purported annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. On May 11, 2014, Russia's Federal Security Service arrested Oleg Sentsov at his home in Simferopol, Crimea, territory the international community recognizes as part of Ukraine and where Russia has no legal jurisdiction. A Ukrainian filmmaker whose work had garnered international attention, Sentsov had just taken part in a rally to support the Euromaidan protests in Kiev and to oppose Russia's occupation of Crimea. Similarly, Russian occupational authorities arrested Oleksandr Kolchenko, a pro-Ukrainian activist, 5 days later. Both were illegally transported to Russia, forcibly assigned Russian citizenship to deprive them of their rights as foreign citizens, and held in detention without trial for over a year. The United States strongly condemns the trial and sentencing of film director Oleg Sentsov and activist Oleksandr Kolchenko as groundless, a violation of human rights, and a contravention of international law. This is clear miscarriage of justice, said State Department spokesman John Kirby. Both Ukrainians were taken hostage on Ukrainian territory, transported to and imprisoned in Russia, and had Russian citizenship imposed on them against their wills. They have reported abuses by Russian authorities, who also restricted their access to lawyers, family, and others while in jail for more than a year. Mr. Sentsov and Mr. Kolchenko were targeted by authorities because of their opposition to Russia's attempted annexation of Crimea, said spokesperson Kirby. The United States stands by those who are persecuted for exercising their rights to speak freely and engage in peaceful protest. We again call upon the Russian Federation to implement the commitments it made in signing the Minsk agreements by immediately releasing Oleg Sentsov, Oleksandr Kolchenko, Nadia Savchenko, and all other remaining hostages.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.